It's a beautiful day, and it's maybe got nothing to do with the weather. It's the kids in school in Saskatoon today are saying last day of school, rejoicing when that bell goes. That was the day for Regina children yesterday, and throughout the province. There's some that have to stick it out one more day, but nonetheless, this weekend symbolizes school done for the year, and the weather maybe of little consequence to the kids, at least today. It's all about getting that final bell going. We've got a full show today, lots to talk about. FSIN has come out with a very strongly worded news release calling for the immediate reinstatement of Rhonda Blackmore and alleging internal corruption of the RCMP. I want to talk a bit about that after nine. Also, Premier Danielle Smith starting her cross-province summer Alberta Next meetings, setting the stage for a 2026 referendum. We're going to open up phone lines after nine. We'll talk about those issues and a whole lot more. Also on the show today, a chief economist from Deloitte will join us to take a look at Canada's economic outlook through a report called Tariffs, Trade, and a New Path Forward. I mentioned last day of school, summer freedom for kids, presenting some great opportunities for parents. Jen Dean, our friendly parenting expert and family coach, will join us once again to share some of her tips and tricks to get you and your kids through summer. And speaking of that, I'm looking forward to this after 11 o'clock this morning. Mike Arnold, remember Mike? We had him on the show. He is the world champion barbecue pitmaster, won the competition in the States. He's joining us to talk a little bit about barbecuing, grilling, smoking, and in fact, we're going to open up the phone line. So we've got Mike here to answer your barbecue and smoking summer tips. So you've got some success happening at the grill this summer. That and a whole lot more. Let's get going with today's Big Talker.
Let's get down to business, shall we?
Welcome.
Let's begin.
The Evan Bray Show. The Big Talker.
Well, we chatted quite a bit about this yesterday. The last day of the 2025 NATO summit yesterday gathered in The Hague in the Netherlands. Discussions were had as to whether NATO will basically live up to its spending agreement. The 2% was where it was before. And Canada, don't forget, just agreed to meet that target in this fiscal year. Well, following yesterday, we heard, of course, Prime Minister Mark Carney say that Canada's committed to reaching NATO's new defense spending target of 5% of GDP by the year 2035. We heard our prime minister tell reporters at the NATO summit that planning is underway as we speak to boost Canada's current commitment, which is 3.5% to direct military spending, 1.5% for industrial and infrastructure-related military investments. So to help us break this down, a guest that we've had on this show before, Dr. Christian Loyprecht. We enjoyed the conversation we had with Dr. Loyprecht earlier this year. He's a security expert. He's a professor at the Royal Military College in Queen's University. He's an author. He's the editor of the Canadian Military Journal, senior fellow at the Macdonald Laurier Institute, and just a regular contributor to news media across Canada. Dr. Christian Loyprecht joins us by phone. Doctor, thanks so much for giving us some time this morning.
And he always enjoys being on in his favorite province.
Well, thank you for adding that. I'll have to add that to your intro next time, Dr. Loyprecht. So can I maybe just start with getting your reaction to the news that came out of the NATO summit on funding, now up to 5%? Thoughts on that?
Yeah, so look, it was the shortest NATO summit in anyone's recent memory, and it was also the shortest communique. And so that suggests to you that it was difficult to get agreement on just about anything else other than the spending targets. And I think everybody wanted to let Donald Trump walk away with the win so that he could say he did what no other president was able to do, to get not only everybody to pony up, but to pony up to 5%. But, you know, I interpret this a little differently than sort of how people have laid this out. You know, countries aren't spending more because Donald Trump told them to spend more. Countries are spending more because they're losing trust in the United States, and they're not confident the U.S. will be there for them when push comes to shove. And so rather than interpreting this as a big success, I would say this is an indication of the failure of U.S. leadership and the changing nature of U.S. priorities, and we all better get used to it. And those people who say, like, you know, why do we spend all this money on the military? I'll tell you, it's a very dangerous world, and spending that amount is like an insurance policy. It's still a whole lot cheaper than having to get into an actual war with Russia.
Dr. Christian Leuprecht is my guest. So I'm curious to know your thoughts on what 5% actually means for Canada. There were some theories that the 2% would actually just get us up to basically plugging some holes that were needed to be plugged in our military. Now we're at 5%. What do you see that we can accomplish with this if we're able to hit it?
So with 2%, we were effectively trying to rebuild the organization. So if you look at NATO has readiness targets, that's about the number of units that could deploy on short notice in the event of a crisis. And Canada was rapidly dropping over the last 4 years from about 90% of units being ready to deploy to about 50% of units being ready to deploy. So you can see where that was going. If we capped up that trajectory within a matter of a couple of years, you would have had armed forces that would not have been able to perform for the government of Canada or for Canadians if called upon in domestic or international crisis situations. Now, what does the 5% get us? This is a terrific question because, of course, it's what are we going to spend this on? And so, you know, for Canada, I think this is part of the reason why politicians are reticent to spend on the military because there's so many priorities. When you're, for instance, in Estonia or in Latvia, it's easy. There's one clear enemy. That's Russia. And so you're going to be spending on deterrence with regards to Russia. But when you're Canada, you need to spend on continental defense. You need to spend on Arctic defense. You need to spend on defending the North American aerospace. You need to spend on our relationship with Europe and our European allies. We have interests in the Indo-Pacific. And I think politicians look at that and go, oh, my word, what do we spend? And it's going to be so expensive. But I would say there are two priorities for us in this. One is we should stop talking about spending on defense. What we're really spending on is deterrence. Because there's only one game in town, which is changing the mind of the tyrant in Moscow. The tyrant in Moscow has clear designs on a NATO member state, likely one of the three Baltic states, Estonia, Latvia, or Lithuania. And so we need to make sure he understands that not only European allies, but Canada and the United States are there to defend that NATO territory. And if you look at the NATO communique from the summit, it states clearly that the U.S. commitment to NATO is ironclad, which is also a signal to Putin. But it's also clear that the United States are talking about burden shifting. That is to say, it's for European countries and Canada to take more responsibility in terms of safeguarding the European neighborhood by conventional means. Mm. Now, the question is, why should Canada help out Europe? And there's a very simple reason, because we have a U.S. president that is threatening our political and economic sovereignty. And for 100 years, we've used our relationship with Europe to counterbalance against the vagaries of U.S. unilateralism. And if you notice, when Keir Starmer traveled to the White House and was asked about Trump's threats to Canadian sovereignty, he was silent. Why? Because Canada, for the past decade, has not added a whole lot of value to our European allies. And the Prime Minister Carney, has realized that we need to urgently rebuild our credibility and our trust to deliver for European allies, because if we don't have friends in Europe, then this will ultimately compromise our sovereignty, because then our only option will be to draw closer to the United States, and the result will be that we'll be very alone in the world, we'll have to invest a whole lot more in foreign affairs, and we'll get a whole lot lower return. So this is excellent value for money for Canada and for Canadian sovereignty.
It's such an interesting conversation. Dr. Christian Leuprecht is my guest, the security expert professor at Royal Military College. So one of the things I was curious to get your opinion on, and I think you've taken us a step into this, but let's look even bigger. Is this more than just an increase in defense spending? Is this what we could consider an international rebrand of Canada? It's been said many times, Canada in recent years hasn't been taken seriously on the international stage, and we're not just talking about defense. Is this the rebrand that is needed for our country?
Look at it this way. For Canadians who criticize the United States and the U.S. president for what he might be doing in the Middle East or elsewhere, I would say, why is it that we don't have a voice? Look at 1956 and the Suez Crisis. Canada was the kingmaker. We developed the concept of peacekeeping, not to make the world a better place, but to stop the superpowers from going to possible war and possible nuclear war, where we were all going to lose. We have no voice in the Middle East today. Why? Because we've let our instruments of statecraft, and in particular foreign affairs, and the most important instruments of foreign affairs, which is our Canadian Armed Forces, atrophy to the point where, by and large, they're not particularly useful, and they're especially not particularly useful to our allies and to our partners. So this is a way to reassert ourselves. And I would say, if we look at the last 30 years, not only Canada, but European allies have left international and regional security up to the Americans. And I would say, how well has that worked out? And if we think it hasn't worked out all that well, then maybe it behooves us to actually invest in those instruments of statecraft so that we can assert our interests, because it turns out that our interests don't align neatly with those of the United States or, for instance, of Israel. And so if we think we need to be more forceful and more nuanced in how we assert those interests, then those are the instruments that we need to use.
So I want to dig into that then, Dr. Loi-Prek, because we haven't made the spend yet. We've committed to the spend. We haven't made the spend. And although we're not directly involved in the Middle East battle right now, oil prices are sliding. We're hearing from Erwin Kotler recently that sleeper cells from Iran might have been activated in Canada. So what should Canada be doing? Aside from putting out a media release on the need for a ceasefire, what role should we be playing in this Middle East situation?
Well, so let me say two things. One is, when it comes to defense spending, we need to change the risk calculus. For 25 years, we've put all the risk on operations of the Canadian Armed Forces because politicians have not been willing to take any political risk, any financial risk, or any reputational risk when it comes to defense spending, procurements, and the like. And so this, if the Prime Minister is serious, it also comes with significant risk for the government. And we need to understand that some things are not going to go according to plan. And then as Canadians, we need to be supportive of the fact that he is taking the sort of risk that no prime minister for the last quarter century has been willing to take. What do we need to do in the Middle East? Well, at a minimum, we can start to act as an honest interlocutor. If you notice, one of the values that Europe has added for President Trump is that it has been mediating effectively with Iran, because Iran doesn't talk to the U.S. directly. It talks to the U.S. through Germany, France, and the UK on the one hand, and Oman and Qatar in the region on the other hand. And in the past, Canada has performed that type of interlocutor and honest broker role. But if we don't have any capabilities, whether those are instruments such as, for instance, a foreign intelligence service and broader instruments of democratic statecraft, and we simply focus on sort of discretionary matters sort of around the world that might make a few people in the prime minister's or the foreign affairs minister's office happy, but that are ultimately discretionary to Canadian interests, then we're probably not going to get great bang for our buck. And I would say that has really been the challenge. It's not just that we've spent far too little, especially over the last decade. I would say that we've gotten a terrible rate of return on the investments that we have made because we've had the wrong priorities to spend on discretionary matters rather than understanding what are Canada's interests in the world and what's happening in the Middle East should really focus the mind.
So on that note, we've only got about a minute left, Dr. Loi-Prek, but obviously we've seen NATO keenly interested and involved in various different ways in the Russia-Ukraine conflict. What role, if any, should NATO be playing in the Israel-Iran conflict, especially if the conflict spills beyond those regional borders?
Well, we all have the same interest, Canada and our European allies, which is ultimately regional stability. As smaller countries, look, any conflagration in the Middle East runs a very high risk of, for instance, generating large migratory flows to Europe. Iran, for instance, is a country of 90 million people. If even 1% of people in Iran decide the situation is so bad, they got to leave and go somewhere else, that's 900,000 people. In 2015, we had 1 million Syrians making their way to Europe, and it caused a political crisis in Europe and stoked flames on the extreme right. We have critical elections coming up in both Poland and in France. This is hardly the time where we can afford to have destabilizing effects on European politics as Canadians. And so it behooves us to use everything we possibly can do to provide stability, not just for the sake of the humanitarian outcomes and making lives more livable for people in the Middle East, but also for our own interests and those of our allies in Europe.
We're going to have to leave it there. We're up against the clock. Dr. Loi-Prek, thank you so much for your time this morning. We always appreciate having you on the show.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you. Have a lovely morning.
Dr. Christian Leuprecht, who is a security expert, professor at the Royal Military College in Queen's University. He's the editor of the Canadian Military Journal, a regular contributor to media across Canada, and his thoughts on not only Canada reaching that 5% GDP spending limit with regard to defense, but really, what are we doing with that money? What does that investment get us as a country? We'll take our break. We'll be right back here on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.